Okay, right now, chances are good you have between 5 and 25 inches of snow on the ground, but there's a thaw in the forecast, and the surest sign of spring, Horticulture Day, returns to our weekly schedule. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. Entomologist Donald Lewis and horticulturist Richard Giron will be here. We'll talk about how this long, cold winter might affect insect populations this spring and, of course, answer your questions. Another sure sign of spring, today is the first day of our spring membership drive, and everyone who gives this hour will have an oak tree planted in their honor. Give at iowapublicradio.org. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It is Horticulture Day today, and not only are temperatures finally trending upward across the state, Hort Day returns to our weekly forecast. So that means that spring is really here, and with me today, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning.
And Iowa State University Extension entomologist Donald Lewis. Hello, Donald.
Hello, Charity. Glad to be here.
And now, of course, through this long, harsh winter, a lot of us have been looking for the positive, trying to find the silver lining behind all those dark storm clouds. And something that a lot of people have been speculating about is, with this long, hard winter, at least it'll kill some of those invasive pests we're having so much trouble with. So give us the lowdown. What does a long, cold winter mean to insect populations?
Probably less than we wish for. I think the way you stated it, that it will be fatal to some of the insects, is probably accurate. The wishful thinking that I hear from people asking this question, though, is will it eliminate them? Will they be gone? Will we never see them again? Please tell me that this winter was fatal to all of them. That's overly optimistic. That's wishful thinking. Yes, there will be some mortality. The interesting question for me is, what was the mortality in a normal winter? That we've got some reports. There have been some research positions stated from around the country. Virginia Tech University noticed that 90% of the brown marmorated stink bugs left in a bucket outside died. Well, 90% sounds like a pretty high mortality factor. But what was the mortality factor last year? We don't know what is normal for winter losses. So there are always losses over different periods of an insect's life. Some of them don't make it past the egg stage. Some of them can't make it past the immature stage. Some of them die prematurely as adults before they reproduce. Some of them die during hibernation. This is all natural and normal. And then come the good weather of spring and summer and the chance to reproduce, the insects will catch up. So I think that's where we're going to be next year. There may be a momentary dip in the number of insects that are out there, but by and large, insects are better adapted for this climate than we are. They are the survivors. We are the ones who have struggled.
Okay. I think a lot of people are hoping, when they think particularly about those invasive species, though, are hoping that, maybe they come from a place where the winters aren't as harsh as Iowa. Our native insects can make it through. But what about the emerald ash borer? They don't like the cold, right?
Well, they probably don't like it, but they are in a tree that probably doesn't like the cold either. You think about those trees that are standing there at minus 11, minus 20, minus 30 degrees Fahrenheit. Those trees are surviving, and the insects that are in them probably are as well. But research out of northern Minnesota did find that there was winter mortality for the emerald ash borer larvae that are inside tree trunks over winter. So there could be mortality, but that was northern Minnesota with a particularly thin-barked form of ash, and we don't think our cold temperatures are going to have that great of an impact on the emerald ash borer, and I hasten to add, in the 8 locations within the state right where it has been discovered. Not everybody gets to think about emerald ash borer yet, just those 8 locations where it has been discovered.
Although it has really surprised me that we have found so much evidence of the emerald ash borer during the wintertime. I kind of thought, we're not going to have to worry about that again until spring.
You would think that we would notice dying dead trees in the summer when, oh, look, the top of the tree is dead. You would think that would attract some attention. And it has been that. It's interesting who has found the emerald ash borer in the locations where it's been. Often it's been a homeowner. In a couple of cases, it was tree care companies that were doing wintertime pruning. They were taking advantage of some nice days to be up in the tree pruning. In one case, they were in the case of Waterloo, it was the city foresters who were out doing their maintenance work who came across trees and they were trimming and said, oh, this doesn't look right. We better further investigate. And that's how it was found. So anytime people are working on trees, it's possible to find the emerald ash borer. But most of us are going to notice the top dead in the summer as the main symptom of emerald ash borer attack.
Now that we have these eight places in the state where we know the emerald ash borer is, do you think that we're going to see a big jump as soon as things start warming up?
Well, I sort of predicted there would be this long, gradual arrival of emerald ash borer. They would sort of sprinkle in. Our first discovery in the state of Iowa was back in 2010, and then we went through 2011 and 2012 without any additional ones. But then, bam, we had five counties discovered in 2013, and then two more here in 2014 already. So it just feels like, oh, this is a snowball rolling downhill and it's gaining momentum and it's gaining speed. I think it's going to be quite random. I think it's going to be quite hit and miss that we'll go through some periods of, oh, look, a couple new discoveries have been found. And then we go months without hearing of anything more. I think it's going to be quite scattered.
Okay. Well,
that's my crystal ball. What's yours?
Right. somewhat reassuring. How about the normal insect populations that we do, that are native to the state of Iowa, that we do start to see in the spring? Are there any populations that we may expect to see a little less of?
There are some things that we have had in the state of Iowa that are definitely southern insects. And one that everybody thinks about as blowing up here from the southern part of the United States are those huge 4-inch long praying mantids that we see only occasionally and usually in about the southern half, southern two-thirds of the state. That is a southern insect that will not have survived the winter. They'll probably still be in southern Iowa this coming spring, but we may not see the praying mantis in the middle of the state like we have the last couple of years following milder winters. Another southern insect that is going to have been pushed back south is the bagworm. This is a caterpillar that feeds on arborvitae and spruce trees, can be quite destructive and is always a problem down in St. Louis, Indianapolis, Kansas City, and is occasionally a problem in southern Iowa and as far north as Ames and about Highway 30. But that's a southern insect that won't be here right away in the spring next year. It'll take it a couple of years to reestablish from populations that survive down south.
Now, one of the things that I look forward to in spring, honestly, is the appearance of the first flying insect, because then I think, oh, it's warm enough.
Yeah.
It really is spring. When do you think we'll start to see that?
You know, I've had moths hit my windshield in March already. I think about driving across the state kind of in the evening and seeing moths hit your windshield in March. It's really more like April before things start to perk along. A lot of our insects are going to have to come out of a pretty deep, long-lasting hibernation. They've hidden under the fence row, the tall grass at the fence rows. They've hidden under grass clippings and wood chips and places like that. And now there's snow on top of those hiding places. So we have to get the snow off of the hiding places. Then the warmth from the sun has to penetrate down into the tall grass, into the wood chips, in order for the insects to be active. Some of our subterranean insects, like the tomato hornworm, the white grubs, other insects that are in the soil, we have to thaw out that soil. The temperature has to penetrate down from the top. It could be a little later this year, but you know, it's going to be 50 this weekend and maybe winter's over and we'll go back to very warm temperatures and lots of sunshine would be good too.
Well, I've been looking for all the signs of spring and the girls' state basketball tournament ends this weekend. So that means that spring can come in Iowa, right?
That's right. It's sort of a harbinger of what's to come. And we're coming up on prom season. That means it's going to be springtime as well. Lots of events happen as the weather starts to change. But we'll be watching for those flowers on red maples. You know, there's some things that just happen way early that you think, oh, yeah, okay, it's going to happen. We'll watch for the sap to flow from the wounds of our maple trees. Okay, that's a sign that spring is coming. And there'll be some flies and some scavenger beetles out just as soon as the their body temperature reaches 50 degrees, and they'll be warning us that spring is on the way as well.
I'm talking with Iowa State University Extension entomologist Donald Lewis. Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron is also here, and you're welcome to join our conversation with your questions. The number to call is 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And of course, Richard, with things starting to warm up, there are a few chores that we kind of need to get taken care of before things get really warm. One of those things is pruning. Now, now the clock is ticking, right?
Well, I would say we would have maybe another 4 to 6 weeks to maybe do our pruning. I don't see a lot of things leafing out until probably at earliest mid-April, so maybe 4 to 6 weeks. Now, as far as oak trees, get those done soon. I would say within the next week or so, and you should be okay.
All right. And I have heard people wondering about some of the plants that we have in the ground, of course, that we're waiting for mm-hmm. them to bloom this spring. Bulbs, for example, will this long, cold, very, very cold winter affect spring bulbs?
They should be perfectly fine. They're going to be later than normal, I would say, but they'll be perfectly fine. They've been in the ground covered with snow. They're perfectly fine. Now, one thing I am seeing is I'm starting to see some browning on some of the evergreens, like your yews, arborvitae, boxwood, some of the pines. Typically on the south and west side, that's a desiccation injury that occurred over winter. I think it may be quite severe this spring. We typically see the browning in late winter, early spring, so we may see more and more of it, this over the next, let's say, 3 to 4 weeks. There's really not much you can do. I would wait until the plant begins to grow and see if these things kind of grow back out of it. But in some cases, you may have to do some pruning.
All right. Let's get to the phones. The number to call is 866-780-9100. And Rod is on the line, Garden Grove. Hello, Rod.
Yes. Good morning.
Hi. What's your question?
I've got a couple. One is, they're both emerald ash borer questions. And I'm curious if the smaller prickly ash is susceptible and the ornamental mountain ash.
Nope. Neither one of those are ash trees.
Right.
Neither
right.
one of them are the genus Fraxinus. So when you look at the scientific name of an ash tree like green ash, white ash, blue ash, black ash, they all start with the genus name Fraxinus. And
gotcha.
Mountain ash is not in that group, and prickly ash is not in that
right.
group.
Mountain ash is Sorbus, and I think prickly ash is Xanthocyllum, I believe.
Okay, a follow-up question on the same topic. What's so unique about the other ash trees, the true ash trees, that this borer will survive there and not survive in the cambium of, elms, walnuts, oaks, or anything else?
What we're seeing is the end product of generations and probably thousands of years of generation of coevolution. That why do tomato hornworms only feed on tomato plants? Why does the eastern tent caterpillar only feed on apple, crabapple, and prunus? Why does the walnut caterpillar only feed on walnut? It's because over the millennia of generations, they have co-evolved to be compatible with each other, that the insect has evolved just to feed on that one. And back in China and other areas where the emerald ash borer is native, this coevolution took place over the millennia, and now we have an insect that is host plant specific for that genus. And that's not unusual. In fact, that's more common than the other way. The examples I already mentioned, like tomato hornworm and Colorado potato beetle only feeds on potatoes and related plants. Most plants, most insects are host plant specific, and that's what we see with the emerald ash borer.
All right. We can get one more question in before the break. This is from Brent. He said he failed to trim his lilac bushes last year after the bloom. Is it okay to trim this spring, or should he do it right now?
Okay. Well, it kind of depends upon the extent. If they want to do some major pruning, I would do that sometime over the next 3 to 4 weeks. If they want to do some light pruning, I would do that immediately after bloom.
All right. So there is time. There's always next year, too, right? There's always some time. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a few minutes. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa on Iowa Public Radio. We are back to weekly horticulture days. Hooray. Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron is here today, along with Iowa State University Extension entomologist Donald Lewis. And of course, they are here to answer your questions. You can join the conversation by calling 866-780-9100 or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Pardon me. It is Horticulture Day today, and we are back to our weekly Horticulture Days, a sure sign of spring here at Iowa Public Radio. With me today, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron and Iowa State University Extension entomologist Donald Lewis. They are here to answer your questions about plants and bugs. Give us a call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call with your question. 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And hey, we have something fun going on our Facebook page right now, too, because we're talking about everybody who contributes during the fun drive gets a tree planted in their honor. If you've ever had a tree planted in your honor or planted a tree for someone special in your life, we'd love to see a picture of that tree. So you can send that to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or send it to us through Facebook, and we'll be posting those throughout the week. And let's get back to the phones and take a question. Charles is on the line from Davenport. Hi, Charles.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I have this fungus growing in my yard. I think it's called dog stinkhorn or something along those lines, and I'm trying to figure out how to get rid of it because it seems I've tried fungicides off the shelf, nothing seems to be working.
So what are you seeing actually, and where is it? Is it in the grass, in a mulch?
It's in the mulch. It's like it's taken up my entire flower bed. I mean, just around the house, everywhere.
Okay. Well, there is a fungal growth that grows on mulch, basically wood chips. It's called slime mold, and it kind of looks like it's kind of yellow green. Kind of looks like dog vomit is what it looks like. It typically appears and then disappears in a matter of a few days. There's not much you can do to control it. You could try a different mulch. It basically tends to grow on wood mulches. You could try a different mulch. You could use shredded leaves or grass clippings or something else, and it may not reappear, but it basically grows on wood-type mulches.
Okay, yeah, because this, it isn't a slime green. It's really hard to describe. I mean, I think it's called dog stinkhorn or something, but it's just been, I've tried to sweat everything under the sun, and I can't seem to get rid of it at all.
No, fungicides are not effective. Fungicides are not effective. Now, when it occurs, what you can do is go out with like a pitchfork or something and lift up the mulch, kind of air it out, and that will discourage it in the future for that year. But fungicides are not very effective. It just pops up, it's there for a few days, and it kind of dries up into a kind of a gray powder.
But stinkhorn is a tall, upright fungal growth.
Right.
So is that what you have? Is something upright and spiky?
Yes, that's what I have.
Okay.
The same thing.
It's
same type of thing. It basically grows on wood-type mulches. It's pretty common.
Yeah.
Basically harmless. It's not going to harm anything, but its appearance is rather
disconcerting.
Disconcerting.
Yeah.
And it does also smell. It does also smell. But I would just probably take a pitchfork and loosen it if you have wood chips. And if it really appears on a regular basis, I would try maybe a different mulch.
We can also put in a plug for our plant and insect diagnostic clinic that you could send them a photo at sickplant@iastate.edu. Sickplant is one word, and IA State is our abbreviation for Iowa State, then .edu. they can look at it and can help you with a species and give you the exact name so you're no longer guessing what to call it when you curse it.
All right. And another question. This one is from Ed in Iowa City. Speaking of things that might be cursed, we were talking a little bit about the brown marmorated stink bug earlier in the hour and how the winter might affect them. Ed wants to know a little bit of background on them and why he says they're seeing them in the house this year.
Yeah. Well, the brown marmorated stink bug has only been in the United States since 1998. The first ones were found over in Scott County only a few years ago. We now have them reported to us from Davenport, Dubuque, Council Bluffs, and about a dozen places in between. So it's not everybody's problem yet, but the brown marmorated stink bug is a double duty pest. It feeds on plants, vegetables, fruits, corn, soybean, trees and shrubs in the summer. And then in the fall of the year, it invades the house just like a box elder bug or a multicolored Asian lady beetle. So that same hiding in protected locations to make it through the winter behavior that we see in box elder bugs is true of the stink bugs. So brown marmorated stink bug is a household pest for most people first. Eventually the populations build up and it becomes an agricultural pest. But it overwinters in the house trying to hide in protected locations just the same as the box elder bug.
All right. Let's go back to the phones and talk with Sue on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Sue.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a question about bagworms. We didn't know what they were, and last year we had a terrible infestation.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did was I picked them off individually, smashed them, mm-hmm. put them in plastic, and put them in the garbage.
Okay.
But we didn't do any pruning of any of the what I call evergreens. What should we do this year?
You've done all that you need to do for the bagworm, and winter might have done the same thing for you because of our sub-zero temperatures this year, but picking off bags in the winter is a great way to interrupt the development. Now, your next question, though, depends on how much of the tree is defoliated, and are we talking about an upright tree or are we talking about a shrub?
Well, we have a number. We have several different types of shrubs. And they also went, we have pencil pines, whatever they were. My husband planted all these out on our parking. So they were all over. I mm-hmm. mean, it was terrible. And probably one of ours has maybe a third of the shrub that's dead.
Okay. What I'd be inclined to do is maybe wait.
Okay.
In spring, if there's any live tissue present, you should have some buds breaking and some new growth.
Uh-huh.
And let's say you wait, and in early July, there are still areas that are totally brown.
Okay.
If they're totally brown at that point, there's nothing living in that portion, and you can prune those portions off.
Okay.
But I would kind of wait and see what it does this spring and hope to see some new growth on some of these bare areas.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much.
All right, Sue. Thanks a lot for your call.
Bye.
Bye. You can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. We've got a couple of lines open for your question right now. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Paul is on the line next from Story City. Hi, Paul.
Hello. How are you?
Good. What's your question today?
Well, this is about hydrangea. You know, I see those all over town. They're big mm-hmm. bushes and resplendent. And I planted one out here at the farm. I thought I was planting John Wayne, but I got Martin Short instead.
Okay.
These are underperforming. And
okay.
I wonder why. They're Annabelle smooth hydrangea.
Okay. Well, there are many, many, many hydrangeas. They're not typically that hard to grow. Now, there are some varieties that are kind of not as winter hardy as some of the old-fashioned varieties, but Annabelle is perfectly hardy, so that shouldn't be an issue. How tall do they get?
Well, they're about knee high, but they're not sparse, and they don't burgeon up like the ones I see uptown.
Okay.
They're in an area by the house where there's shade in the morning and full sun in the afternoon. And the card I got with the plant says partial shade. So
yeah, I think a better site would be morning sun, afternoon shade.
Okay.
Because they don't like the intense afternoon sunlight. So you might want to maybe move them maybe this spring.
Okay.
They would like maybe around 3 to 4 hours of sun, preferably morning sun, afternoon shade. The other thing is they're not drought tolerant, so make sure the soil is a moist, well-drained soil.
Okay.
And if need be, maybe add some organic matter to the soil when you plant it, so because the organic matter will hold the moisture. They wilt very badly if they get dry. Mm-hmm. So make sure, I would prefer morning sun, afternoon shade, a moist, well-drained organic soil, and they should do better.
I should add peat moss or something like that.
You can add peat moss or compost, right. Mm-hmm.
Well, we'll try that because these boys need to do better than they're doing.
And the best time to dig those would be as soon as the ground is workable, before they leaf out, just dig them up and move them.
I'll do it.
All right, Paul. And, you know, I've never thought about hydrangeas as a very masculine plant. You're changing my whole idea of these flowers.
Well, everyone uptown has such good luck. They're around office buildings and huge bushes.
They are beautiful.
Mine are just really bad.
Oh. Well, good luck, Paul. Thanks a lot for your call.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. Here's a delicious question from Virginia. She says, how well do pawpaws grow in Iowa?
We can grow those, especially in the southern half of the state.
All right, and they tend to do very well, is what I've heard.
Yeah, yeah.
Although we planted two pawpaw trees at the beginning of the drought, not last summer, but the summer before, and ours did not do well.
They might recover.
Yeah, the last two summers have been rather difficult, yeah.
Right.
They have been.
The other question, though, is what are you going to do with your pawpaws? Do you like to eat them?
I do. I like them.
Okay. Not everybody
Apparently
does.
Apparently you don't.
Well, I think I've enjoyed them kind of a couple of times, but that was enough.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. The number to call, 866-780-9100. Justin is on the line. Hi, Justin.
Hi.
Hi. What's your question?
Well, my dog has destroyed my backyard throughout the freeze and thaw process this winter, and I was wondering when the proper time to start planting some new grass seed back there would be.
I would be shooting for around probably mid to late April. Yeah, I think we're going to have a kind of a late spring this year, so it's going to take a while for the snow to melt, for the ground to kind of firm up and that type of thing, and for it to warm up too. So I'd be shooting for around mid to late April.
Okay. And can you tell me what the best kind of hardiest grass would be for central Iowa?
Well, typically we grow bluegrass. Bluegrass is the preferred grass if we have at least 4 to 5 hours of direct sun per day. Bluegrass does like sun. If we have a lot of shade, we would typically go with the fine leaf fescues, things like creeping red fescue, hard fescue, chewings fescue. Now with the bluegrass, we typically add a little bit of perennial rye in there, maybe 10% perennial rye. That germinates very quickly.
Okay. All right. Very nice. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Justin. Crabgrass is pretty hardy, too.
Yes, it is.
At least in my yard. It does really well.
Very resilient.
Yes.
Yeah, but it's a bunch grass, so it leaves a lot of bare space in between that the dog can tear up.
Yeah, that's true. All right. You can join our conversation with your question at 866-780-9100. 866-780-9100. Still time for you to get in on this conversation. Pat is on the line next from Manchester. Hi, Pat.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I have a question about burning bushes and rabbits. I have two large burning bushes on the south side of my house, and the rabbits came in when the snow was deep and stripped the bark on the upper part of it. And then now that the snow has melted down, there's probably 2 feet of the bush below that they haven't affected. And I'm wondering if they can be pruned or if I'm going to need to just plan on replacing them.
Yeah, well, they'll come out of it, but they've been severely damaged. Basically, those branches that have been girdled, where they have eaten the bark down to the wood all the way around it, those areas beyond that will die. They'll probably leaf out this spring, but they can't sustain themselves, so those portions should be pruned out.
Okay.
And so prune back to where you have basically intact bark.
Okay.
And they will not die. They will resprout. But it may take 2 or 3 years before they get back to their current size.
Okay.
Have you put your snow fence up now that the rabbits have already been in?
I think it's a little late.
Okay.
Yeah, the burning bush is one of those plants they just love. I mean, when food is scarce, when you have snow cover, and I think in northeast Iowa it's been since early December,
when you have
extended snow cover, there's no food available to them. Anything above ground level is fair game as far as rabbits are concerned. So.
Well, they don't seem to care for the lilac bush.
No.
They do like the burning bush, so
yeah.
I guess I'll go with the snow fence next year.
And make it 3 foot tall. That should work.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Pat, thanks a lot for your call. You can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send your questions to Talk of Iowa at iowapublicradio.org. Charlie is on the line next in Burlington. Hi, Charlie.
Hello.
Hi. What's your question?
I have a mock orange bush that is huge, and the birds love it in the wintertime for a haven. But it's become very spindly and woody at the bottom.
Okay.
And I just need to rein it back a little bit because it's getting out of control, and I wondered the best way to do that and when to do it.
I think what I would do would be to go out in maybe 2 or 3 weeks, and I would basically look at it very carefully and maybe select several, maybe 4 or 5, 6, of the largest, oldest stems and remove them as close to the ground as I can get. So get rid of some of that old growth, okay? And then maybe shape up the rest of the plant and then do the same thing again next year where you go out and maybe take out some of the old growth again near the ground, maybe 3 or 4 next year. And over time, get rid of most of that old growth and you'll get new growth in the base and kind of shape that up as it grows. And you should have a nice, hopefully very attractive plant maybe in 3 or 4 years. It's going to take a while to kind of rejuvenate it.
Okay, and the best time is
March or early April before they start to leaf out. Now, obviously that's going to affect bloom. They're not going to bloom as much, but at least you can basically get the plant back to a healthy, vigorous state.
Okay. Can I ask another question?
Sure.
I have a question about tomatoes, too.
Okay.
We have a lot of walnut trees in our yard.
Okay.
And we can't seem to find a location for planting tomatoes in the ground. And I've heard that walnut trees can send off some kind of toxicity that tomatoes don't like. I don't know if that's true or not.
It's true. They produce a compound called juglone, which can inhibit the growth of some plants like tomatoes. Tomatoes are very sensitive to it. And so if they're very close to a walnut tree, for example, within the drip line of a walnut tree, they're not going to perform very well at all, no.
So my question is, if I did a raised bed garden and tried to put the tomatoes in a raised bed, would I need to put something in the bottom of the raised bed to keep any infection, for lack of a better term, of the walnut tree from getting up into the tomatoes?
Well, I would assume over time the roots will try to invade that area, yes, because they seek out moisture, nutrients, and they will kind of seek that out too. I suppose you could put a screen there to maybe discourage that to some extent at the very bottom, but allow for water drainage.
Okay. But walnut has probably been my problem if I can't get far enough away.
Yeah, typically you want to be beyond the drip line of the walnut tree.
Yeah.
If you're beyond the drip line, you probably should be okay.
Okay. Very good. Thank you very much.
All right, Charlie, thanks a lot for your call. And again, you can still join our conversation at 866-780-9100. Here's an email question at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org from Judy. I built 2 raised beds in order to more easily grow root crops, turnips, carrots, parsnips, and filled the beds with a soilless mixture. Nearly every vegetable was damaged by tunneling, I presume from some kind of worm. What can I do to cleanse my growth medium?
Wow. Some kind of worm. Well, Let's rule out earthworms because they're beneficial and don't feed on plants. Worm, you know, you start to think of things like voles and some other small mammals that make tunnels that would feed on underground plant parts. But that doesn't seem very likely either. So maybe she's talking about some sort of an insect larva that's in the soil. And there aren't very many that are generalists that would feed on a wide variety of things. Oh, let's just say we need more information.
Okay.
you know, let's write back to her and say, can you give us more detail? What did the damage look like? Because nothing is coming to mind, especially something that would be in a soilless mix. That should have been a pretty good way to raise things. But there are scavengers. There are things like millipedes that will feed on decaying organic matter that if something else started the problem, the millipedes will come in and take advantage of that. That would be the same for some fly larvae and so forth. So I think I'm going to punt on this one and say we need more information to give a better answer.
All right. So if Judy, for example, maybe took pictures of this damage last summer, she could send that to you,
That would be good. Or call and we'll talk about it a little more and try to get, okay, what does it look like? Where was it? How extensive was it? We'll try to give a better answer than what I can do right now.
All right. And Shane is on the line next from Cedar Rapids. Hi, Shane.
Hi, good morning.
Good. What's your question?
Well, it's about hydrangeas. My wife just before winter, she cut them down. And last year, the year before, we did maybe 2 foot, 3 foot. This time she cut them really low, and I would say less than a foot. So my concern is what type of growth we'll expect for this season. I've been doing a little bit of reading online, but I'm really kind of not sure what to expect. And I apologize. I don't know what type of hydrangea it is,
okay,
but it's a plant style. So.
Okay, because that's the key, because there are different types. There are those that bloom on new growth. There are those that bloom on old growth. There are those that bloom on both old and new growth. They'll come back, but depending on what they are, they may not bloom very well this year. So, for example, if you had the common Annabelle hydrangea, what you can do with that, it grows about 3 to 4 feet tall. You can prune that right back to the ground perfectly fine. I would not leave it 1 foot high. I would cut it right back to the ground if you wish.
Okay.
But with the big leaf hydrangeas that bloom basically on last year's growth, don't do that because they may not bloom the following year. So,
okay.
So it really depends upon what they are and what they bloom on, new growth or old growth.
Okay, perfect. Well, thank you very much.
All right, Shane, thanks a lot for your call. And we are out of time. Thank you so much for calling and being a part of the show today. And Richard Duran, you'll be back next Friday.
Yes.
Wonderful. Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Duran, Iowa State University Extension entomologist Donald Lewis. Thank you so much for being here today, Donald.
Always a pleasure, Charity. Thank you.
And you come back again soon as well.
I'll be here.
All right. Horticulture Day is back to weekly on Talk of Iowa. As I mentioned, a sure sign of spring. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.